Good afternoon, everyone. Joe Varnador here, and we have Mr. Matthew Edwards on the line as well. So, welcome to the Thursday afternoon call. Matt says I'm coming out to Denver just tomorrow to do an event on Saturday there in Denver, and I was telling Matt that I was just going to wear shorts on the plane tomorrow because since it's 85 degrees here in spring, it should be there as well. But he said it's snowing and sleeting, right, Matt?
Yeah, it's light snow, and tomorrow the high is 37, and Saturday 39. So you might want to put those shorts back in the bag and bring a jacket or some pants or something.
Gotcha. Well, I guess so. I'm glad. I guess I would have eventually checked the Weather Channel before I pack my bag tonight. So anyway, well, good deal. So we've got some content, some good content today, some great questions. So let's get right to it, bud.
Alrighty, so first up, I've got Fred. Let me make sure, see if Fred has made it on yet. He has. So, Fred, you're unmuted and ready to go.
Hey Joe, how
Hey
are you
Fred,
today?
how you doing? I'm doing very well, Fred. How are you?
I'm fabulous.
Very good. So tell me what's going on, and let's get this taken care of.
Well, we've I wouldn't say we fully understand buying notes, but we've bought a few. And now we're in the process of trying to, make a business out of it and resell some of them.
Good.
So I spent most of last week, well, all of last week in Austin, Texas, where one of my partners lives, who's well respected in the community. And we gave a number of presentations that went quite well. And we have four investors who are moving forward, one of whom is most interested in the thing which I think most of us in note school think is a tremendous deal, and that's owning the back end of notes.
Right.
In other words, you buy the note, you sell the partial, you own the back end.
Right.
And so they want to partner with us in order to essentially own that type of investment. And so I'm trying to envision different ways to do that. One fairly obvious way would be to form an LLC with them and us as the members, and fund the LLC and just go ahead and buy notes in the name of that LLC.
Okay.
Another idea that I have is finding some way to price the back end of a note. I know that, that generally they don't have as much value, and certainly that's what is attractive to this investor. In other words, the cost is low, but the payoff is out in his retirement years when he could benefit from that kind of a payoff. And I'm just trying to come up with, the I don't know that there's ever a best,
Well, yeah,
but
and
gather as many as possible.
there's several questions in that, and there's several strategies inside that. So let's kind of break these down one by one and go through them. So first of all, I mean, typically you're going to, buy a note from Colonial, a performing note from Colonial, sell the front end for enough to get your money back and have a little bit to boot, and then hold on to the back end yourself. So
Exactly.
typically, I wouldn't have, you probably wouldn't have wanted to share that back end secret so that you could keep that for yourself. Now, if this
Yeah,
is.
I didn't really share that. This guy is just really sharp.
Okay.
And I was showing them the notes and partials PowerPoint
Right.
as part of our presentation, and he said, "Yeah, it looks like that back end is a really, really good deal." So, I'm kind of stuck with a sharp guy wanting to be a partner with me. I guess there are worse things.
That's right. Well, that's like, you know, what we were talking about on the call a couple of weeks ago or whenever it was, and Eddie was saying, oh my God, you gave your investor a 20% return on his money. You've ruined him for life. Well, I mean, you can always back yourself out of anything. So here's let's talk about that one first, since that's that one's fairly, well, not fairly deep, but the question, one of the questions was that you had was how do we price that back in? And mathematically, if you've seen Eddie do it at the 3-day, the back end of any amortized loan, the last half of that loan is worth about 10% of the value of the loan. So if you've got a 30-year loan, that last 15 years is worth about 10% of the entire total of what the note is worth. The entire note is worth. So it's very little. Now, what you're going to be doing. Excuse me, guys, I didn't mute my cell phone. What you're going to be doing typically is, if you're buying a note from Colonial, it's going to have some seasoning, and it most likely isn't going to be hanging out there for 25 to 30 years on that back end. Okay? So you're going to have to, you know, you've got to monetize what you're going to do with this as well. So that's the number one thing we need to talk about, is how, if that is the plan and you're going to buy a note from Colonial then and sell him the entire note, are you going to find the partial purchaser for the front end as well?
Well, that's kind of that would be inherent in this new LLC.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to talk through this as to how you're going to get paid yourself for putting all this together.
Yeah. Well, part of what I'm anticipating is an upfront fee structure.
You've got to.
And we've talked about you know, unequal shares in the partnership versus the contributed capital, so that we would have sort of an overrepresentation based on the capital that we would contribute to the purchase to funding the LLC. So we'd make some money there, and then we would market the notes that this new LLC had along with our inventory in
okay. And let's talk about that too, and then let's circle back around and kind of wrap it up. This
right.
is how we're going to do it. Because let's talk about, you know, this LLC. Now, one of the just putting together this LLC, and you say that he has about $25,000 to $50,000 to invest. Are you going to be putting money into this as well, or are you guys just using his money and you're doing the work? Is that how your partnership is going to be, or what does that look like?
We would basically be putting in equal amounts of money, but we would get 60% of the
profits, and he would get 40.
Yeah, and they get 40.
Okay, so anytime you enter into something like this, there's several things, in my opinion, that you need to put in place between you and this partner. And one is not only this entity that you're going to form, and that sounds right, the LLC with, you know, both as you owning the LLC, but you've got to put together your partnership agreement, so to speak, as to you're both putting in money, you're getting 60%, he's getting 40%. Are you getting, but you're going to get some type of upfront fee paid out of that money as well for putting these together, obviously, because you're enabling him to be able to do this and be able to access the inventory as well. So is that your plan?
That is exactly the plan, yes.
So whatever that looks like, you're going to put that in as well. Now, he's got to understand that when you invest with someone else, he can't, you know, have a catastrophic or just have a whim in 3 months and say, hey, Fred, I need my money back. So
right.
That's not the way it's going to look. So that needs to be put into the agreement as well. So if he needs to be bought out at some point in time because he has something goes wrong, or, you know, he gets a divorce, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, you need to talk about that as well. And then this thing is going to have to end at some point in time. So are you going to put an end date together on this as well? So you just kind of think those things through. just don't leave anything, any little detail undiscussed, and it's and you need to put it in writing. So
right.
You definitely make sure and do that. Okay, so the second part of that then is you're going to access the inventory. You're going to find the partial buyers. You're going to, you know, both buy these loans. You're going to have somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000, I guess, based on if you're going in at 50/50, as far as both putting in between 25 and 50 as well. So, you know, you need to get that upfront fee, and that's going to be something that you're just going to have to, you know, discuss as well, because again, you've invested in education and you have the inventory of notes, and you're going to be doing all the footwork, legwork on this anyway.
Right.
Okay, so then the other question is how do you value that back end? And gosh, you know, I don't even know that any of the power quoters will value that back end of a note. Now, what you can do is you could kind of back into it and say, okay, if you were to go in with the power quoter and or an HP 10B or 12C, and you were to say, and there was 200 payments left on a loan, and you started playing with, okay, what if we did, what would it be at a whatever yield that you would be looking for? What would it be at a 12% yield if we bought the entire note? What would that be worth? Or a 14% yield or whatever it is. And then back into it and say, okay, what if we bought 180 payments? So you can kind of figure out what those back end payments are worth when you start looking and saying, okay, if the pay price on the full note of 200 payments is $26,000, and if you bought 180 of those payments and you can buy those 100 at the same return and all of that at say $25,000, well, those last 20 payments are worth is worth $1,000. You kind of see my reasoning behind that?
So you basically take the price of the whole note minus the price of the front end partial to come up
right.
with the value of the
and
back
come up end. That's about the only way that I know of valuing those payments, and it's not very much. You know,
right.
That's why I know when I first started in the business 25 years ago, and I was brokering a lot of notes to Metropolitan, who was the big dog in the business back then, and that's why I always did that. So I just figured out that, okay, I would just keep, it was called the tails. I would do a full purchase with them, but then when I went to sell the note, I'd keep the last 20 payments or 25 payments because there was only $1,000 difference in that back end, in those 20 payments or 30 payments. And you can play with that enough to come up with kind of where you want to be. It may be 170 payments or it may be 182 payments, but you can kind of play with that and you can kind of see, okay, this is what we want to keep on the back end. This is what we want to sell. So what you would be doing really is you're going to be making money by, A, when you're going to buy the note, you're going to sell off these payments, and then you're going to have the back end, you're going to get enough there to hopefully pay the note off. Then you're going to have some money to pay yourself at that point in time as well, and then have those back end of payments, and you're just going to have to back into them.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I've asked this question before, and it just is a little bit more current given this current investor. Selling the back end is really it's not an approach we should take.
No, it's not. I mean, I've been doing this for 25 plus years, and I have never sold a back end.
Yeah,
it's just, I mean, it's the thing. So Fred, here's the thing. So if there was a $5,000 back end, would I be willing to throw? It's kind of like the $100 model. Okay, so I'll throw $100 at that to get, and I sell 132 payments to own that 228 payments on the back end. Well, you know, theoretically, it could be 11 years before I received a dollar, but I've only got $100 invested. So Would you find someone who would invest $1,000 to get, you know, $5,000 in payments 10 years from now, or 12 years from now, or 15 years from now? I think that's very highly unlikely.
Uh-huh.
That's why it works better, you know, just to make your money there and just keep those tails, that, you know, either keep the tails where you're buying and you're selling and you're buying a full from whoever you're doing it with, but just keep some of those payments. And what happens is you're just recorded or you're just entered into that transaction as a remainder man on the back end of that. And I know when I was doing a lot of that, I had about 100, 150 of those, and I would get a little check every 4, 5, or 6 months where somebody would, you know, they either sell the house or refinance the loan, and I'd have my little bit of money there on that back end. It may be $2,000 or $3,000, but it sure was nice to get it because I had nothing invested in it.
Right. Let's say you had 100.
Right.
How many of these tails actually end up in monthly payments?
I don't think I, you know, here's kind of the way it goes. So you're typically sometime down the road, and it may be 10 years before you're, or 12 years or 15 years before you're going to get this tail, this last 20 or 25 payments or whatever it is. So it could be that it would go to term and you would have to wait. That very seldom happened. Okay. So that's number one. Number two, if it pays off early, then you're going to get, it pays off in 5 years, and you've got, so you're going to get whatever your little bit of money is, and you can look at the entitlement schedule just like you could with anything else and see what you're going to get, what your payoff would be, you know, in the future. So that's number two. And then number three, you're going to have some of them that are going to, you know, that may fall out, they may default. And right. You're going to get a letter saying, hey, you own the other side of this, so do you want to act to save your position or no? And most of the time it's a no, but I think this has been 15, 18 years ago. I actually did carry through on one and actually foreclosed on it because of my back end. So That could happen as well. But, I mean, you're there. Whatever they do with it, you're there. So whether it goes to term, you're going to get those last payments. Whether it pays off early, you're going to get those last payments early. Or if it were to default, you'd have the option either to walk away or foreclose if you wanted to. So,
as I'm thinking through this, it seems to me that the term of these tails should somehow affect the end date of our LLC. And my initial thought was, well, we should set the end date 30 years out so that, you know, all the tails had resolved prior to dissolving the LLC.
Right, yeah, that's true. And then you've got to take care of if you're not around, or if he's not around, or whatever it is, how is this thing going to come to a close? So you got to remember that as well.
And what about those power quoters are wonderful resources, and it's certainly included within my non-disclosure to Note School and Colonial. And I'm just wondering, in the context of this new LLC, should I get a non-disclosure from that investor, and would I be able to share those power quoters with?
Yeah, anytime you're showing notes that you are receiving from a third party to someone else, you should get an NDA. You should get a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah. And what about sharing the power quota?
I mean, if you guys are, you know, truly, like you say, you're doing business, and as Eddie says, you're sharing a checking account and all of that, I don't think there would be a problem with anybody in Note School of you doing that with, you know. So as long as, you know, he's not sharing it with everybody else out there, but, you know, of course that means that you're going to have to share your your login and password information and that type of thing. So just kind of tread lightly. But if you guys are in this and you are going to be sharing a checking account and you are going to be doing business together, then, you know, again, and you've got your NDA and everything else, that would be that power quota would probably be the least of worries if you guys went south together. Okay. Or okay. You split up or had some kind of. I'm just a real firm believer that you really have to identify a termination of this agreement. And if something were to happen to you, or if something were to happen to him, or you needed to pull out of this, or he needed, you know, what's the buyout situation going to look like? I mean, I've got three friends right now that all three of them own the RIA in Fort Lauderdale, and one of them just isn't, you know, up to par. And so they're, you know, they didn't have any of that stuff in writing as to how we break this thing up. So here's what we've just got to kind of, well, they're going to sue each other. So over the one of the three leaving. So anyway, it's just better to get it out of the way up front. And you can never imagine it happening, but it does. Life changes.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I'm really pretty excited about with this guy is, he's an airline pilot. You know, those guys hang out in a variety of different contexts, and they've all got good salaries. You know, I can just anticipate that if he gets jazzed on this investment, it could really result in.
And you know, you've got, and I don't think is Joe LeCount on the phone today. Is he on there, Matt? I don't think he is. No, Joe's not on, but I'm sure he doesn't mind. I mean, you know, Joe LeCount's brother is an airline pilot, and that's, you know, that's the same thing. He's presented this opportunity to his brother, and now his brother is sharing it with other pilots there. And you know, I'm a pilot, and my brother-in-law is a doctor, so I can tell you that pilots and doctors are two of the worst investors in the world, because they want to give somebody else their money and let them deal with it. And a lot of times they get the wrong end of the stick, is, you know, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, yeah.
People can very easily be taken advantage of. So if you've got someone that is like that, and that you know, his peers are airline pilots, and you're right, they've got money, and as they draw closer to retirement and, you know, all of that, it's a great opportunity. So I would see this as being a great opportunity for you in your business.
So you think we're on the right track here?
Yeah, I do. I don't see anything wrong with that at all.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay, you're welcome. So hey, Fred, here's, I'm going to do this as well. Michael Rogers asked me to kind of pull up a power quota and kind of give an example real quick. I'm going to pull up what I use, because that's just what I use. Matt, you want to in just a second go ahead and shift the screen over to me, and then I can wait a second though. I got to take it back for just a second so I can see my screen.
Okay, give me a second.
I don't want anybody to see my screen, because I'm embarrassed, because it's very full.
We're disappointed that we don't get to see your smiling face the way we do, Kevin.
You know, I am not in my office today, so that's why I didn't. So I'll do
so
it next.
You're out on a sailboat.
So, what I mean is I'm sitting here in my no, I'm not in my underwear. I'm just kidding. Okay, so let's just do a. Let's just pick a number. You want to, let's just take a number and say, okay, the house is worth $100,000. So we've got $100,000. We've got, let's just say the house sold for $100,000.
Joe, are you want me to put that back on your screen now?
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting here going away like I'm just, you know.
Now, these are basically just Excel spreadsheets that we can download.
That's all they are. Yeah, that's all they are, yeah. So, and we're going to say that it's 5% interest and 5% interest, and the term was 300. Let's see. Hold on a second. 100.
Where are these on the Note School site?
This isn't on the Note School site. This is just something that I use. That I've used
for a number of years. I like that completion checklist tab.
What's that?
I like thinking about that completion checklist tab.
Oh, yeah? You know what? I'll have to... Ralph Marshall, I know some of you know Ralph. He created this several years ago, and I've just always used it. And Ralph is an airline pilot, too, so you can imagine that, you know. Checklist, an airline pilot lives by checklists. So you got your pre-take, you got your pre-start checklist, you've got your start checklist, you've got your pushback checklist, you've got your taxi checklist, you've got, there's a checklist for everything that you do when you're a pilot. So 645. Okay, so here we go, and let's just look here. So we know there's 270 payments remaining on this loan. So if we were to buy all of those remaining payments at a 12% yield, we know the balance was $94,000 on this loan. And again, since it's a 5% loan and it's way out there, okay, you're going to have a big discount there. So, or a big haircut. So if we were to buy, if it's 54 there, so what if we bought 200 payments? Okay, so 200 payments means that we would, the 200 payments at a 12 return would be worth $50,468. So literally, there is $4,000 in what you would pay for the entire note based on that same return, that same yield, as there would if you bought just 200. So you could own 70 payments for $4,000. So what if we went up to, let's see, 220? Probably won't change that much, but it'll change a little. So it goes up to 52, basically. So you've got $2,000 in those last payments. Or if we went up to 240 that we buy, now we're up to 53. So you know, that would leave you 30 payments on the back end, assuming there's 30 payments left. So does that kind of make sense to everybody as you're kind of looking at this and saying, okay, if we were to buy, if the 270 would be worth $54,477, or the 230, I think is what it was, right, is worth 52, or 240 is worth 53. So there's about a $1,400 difference between the two. So those last 30 payments, what this is saying is they're worth about $1,300. And that's 30 payments of what was it, $600, some $550 a month?
Yeah.
So that's exactly what it looks like. So let's go back over. What does the upfront fee look like? Are there licensing issues or laws about accepting fees? No, it's nothing different than brokering a note, Gail, as far as doing, as far as charging a fee. So it's no different if let's just look at it in this relation. So Gail, let's say that you were selling this particular note, and I said, Gail, I'll pay you $50,000 for the last 200 and for the 270 payments, or a full purchase. And let's see, 270. Then I screwed my spreadsheet up. Anyway, it's no different than taking a fee for if you flip a note. So you get a quote from somebody else at 50 or 54, and you flip it for 50 to an investor, so you would make the $4,000. So it wouldn't be a big deal to do that. Let's see. Yes, Michael, I pulled that up, so hopefully that answered that question. Bob says, if you sell the back end, then who manages the note if the borrower defaults? Well, if you're and again, probably we're not going to recommend that you sell those back ends, but if you do sell them, you're still going to be in the chain there as a remainder man. So when I own tails, then I'm still going to be notified if that note were to go into default. Just like I would get a check in the mail if the borrower refinanced it and the loan pays off. So part of that is going to go to the person that I the person that owns the other part of that, and I'm getting whatever it is for my 25 or 30 little payments on the back end. And again, you can go to the entitlement schedule there. So very good. Matt, you want to take the screen back?
No, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, give me a second.
Thanks, Joe. That was very helpful.
Very good, Fred. Thanks so much. And yeah, let's and let us know how this continues to work out for you.
Thank you.
Okay, Matt, what do we have next, my friend?
Boom, we got Eric up next, so I'll pull him in.
Mr. Eric. All right, is he on the call?
He is. Eric, go ahead. You're unmuted.
Good day, guys. How are you?
Hey, very good, Eric. How are you?
Great, great. Okay,
good deal. So talk to me.
All right, here is what we have. I have several notes that I bought, and most of them are unrecorded land contracts, and I have the special warranty deeds that were sent to me from Colonial, and I'm right in the process of contacting each county and going through the hoops and getting those mailed down and recorded.
Mike?
My question is, what's the purpose of the assignment on an unrecorded land contract? Is that just...
Here's the thing. It's just like if you were to buy a land contract that was unrecorded, typically you're going to leave it unrecorded, but you're still going to have that assignment. If the land contract were recorded, you would then record that assignment.
Okay. If it goes non-performing and I need to foreclose, then I would give that land contract to an attorney. He would record that in order for it to be foreclosed, or would he just do a eviction notice?
It's going to depend on the state that it's in, okay. Eric. But it would be either one. It would be one or the other.
Okay.
Depending on where it was.
Okay. So if we didn't need to, and we just did a termination,
the eviction process.
Yep, eviction process. I'm already on the deed because it is that. And then those assignments would go nowhere, would they?
That's right.
So once the foreclosure process is passed, that assignment from Colonial to me and from whoever to Colonial, that's all behind and doesn't matter.
That's exactly right.
Okay. One more question. If I sell a partial on some of these unrecorded land contracts, does the partial buyer take title and get recorded on the deed?
Basically, what they do on the land contract is it's going to be the entire note is going to be assigned to that partial buyer for the period of time that they have bought that. So if it's not recorded, then it's basically going to be held in trust during that period of time.
Okay, so my entity would still be recorded at the county as the deed holder.
And then then that person would be known as the remainder man on that back end.
I didn't follow you there. So let's say I have an unrecorded land contract here. I'm going to sell 60 payments to somebody, and I'm right now recorded at the county as the deed holder, as the owner. Yep.
Right.
And so we would, if I sold a partial, it would be held in trust. They would not have a new deed drafted and recorded at the county.
No.
The partial.
No. Okay. No, it wouldn't be. No, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Wouldn't be. Yeah. And basically, since this is service, then the servicer is going to just kind of continue to manage that. And anytime you sell a partial, you need to leave the servicing where it is anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's part of your agreement when you're selling a partial to someone is that it is being serviced by a licensed compliant servicer. That's where it's going to stay. That's where the documents are, and that's the way it's going to look.
Okay. Okay, and if you'd completely broker a note, then you're basically selling the whole thing. They're taking title. It's just sliding the whole thing over. So in that case,
exactly.
Deed would be created. They would take title. Okay. You got time for one more question? What time?
I think so. Let me see. Hold on. Let me look at the question board. Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead. Right.
It has to do with what you just were done talking with Fred about in a certain way. My question is, I have an investor who is interested in investing in notes, but, you know, of course, they don't want to be – they want me to kind of backstop the deal if it goes sideways.
Right.
Is it feasible to just keep a couple or two or three or five payments at the end in order to capitalize on making as much net profit right now as possible so that the deed stays in my name and I can tell them, you know what, I'm just keeping four payments on the end so that if this goes sideways, I'm going to step in and do the foreclosure process. I have skin in the game. And then you don't have to jump through all the hoops and worry about the process or learn the process.
Yeah, well, and there's nothing wrong. And there, even if you did that, they're not going to know that you've got four or five payments or 10 payments at the back end of that unless you tell them.
Okay.
So if you wanted to use that, as you said, as a backstop saying, okay, I do have a vested interest in this paying because I have the back of that, and I'll tell you what Eddie will tell you is that, you know, you can't guarantee that you're going to take that you're going to take them out of it and make them whole if it were to go south, because obviously that's you would be guaranteeing a deal, and that's kind of a security issue. But okay. Just letting them know that you know you're there and you've got a vested interest in the back end of that is certainly. And not using that word guarantee is the best way to go on that.
Okay. So if it did go sideways, and let's say that I moved to Jamaica or someplace far away and they couldn't get a hold of me, and the thing goes sideways, the servicing company is telling them, hey, there's no payments for you this month, they stop paying, how do they go about making themselves whole when
have you looked at the partial purchase agreement on that
no.
We have. Okay, if you'll go on to the go to the website on the side there and pull up and read that partial purchase agreement, it will show you that the remedy that is available in case the deal goes south, and Matt's going to pull it up right there. So one of the remedies is if you weren't around or if you didn't want to fool with it, then they would be responsible for going in, and they would foreclose. They would pay for whatever the cost would be of the foreclosure. The property goes to auction. It sells. You're going to be the first one that gets paid. You're going to get whatever the remainder of your investment would be, and then secondly, they're going to get the back end of that. They're going to they're going to get what they're owed, what their entitlement schedule they're still owed, plus the cost for the foreclosure that they incurred, and then legally the rest of that would go to you.
Okay.
And then the second remedy on the partial purchase agreement is going to say that you have the option, if they don't want to do it, and then you have the option of going in, making them whole, foreclosing on the property, and just paying off whatever the balance of their investment would be.
Okay, great.
So either way, they're covered. Now, if you were in Jamaica you're still having these service, you're both still in chain, so that if it were to default, your servicer is not only going to they'll know that they're not receiving the payments, but since you're in chain, the servicer is also going to inform you that, you know, this loan is gone non-performing, and you need to make sure, and you're covered there because you're in part of that chain as the remainder man on the back of that loan.
Okay. So what typically happens when they start to get 30 days delinquent, 60 days delinquent, and the partial investor gets nervous, and does...
Well, it really depends. It really depends on the expectation that you set up when you entered into this agreement. So, mm-hmm. and the language that you used, if you've told them that, you know, if this thing were to go, if they were to default and the borrower stopped paying, you've told them, not guaranteed them, but you're going to step in. Mm-hmm. So obviously, a couple of the things that can happen is whatever their entitlement was, whatever they were still owed. Let's say you sold a 60 payment partial and 30 payments into it, it defaults. Mm-hmm. They've got to realize that it's going to be 30, 60, 90 days until something may or may not happen. So, mm-hmm. That's not a cause for a borrower being 30 days past due. Is not anything to he needs to freak out over, and yeah. you need to make sure and tell them that. And what I tell people when I'm selling partials, so look, here's the thing: if I consider an on-time payment, if the payment is made before the next one is due, then it's on time. Okay. So yeah. if you've got late charge provisions and with your servicer on those, then that's being added to it as well. So whatever. Okay. I had a loan once that the guy paid. The payment was due on the 1st. He paid on the 20th every month, and every month he got hit with a service charge. And I had my servicer call him and say, "Look, let's just modify this so that your payment is due on the 20th." No, I don't want to fool with that. And they're like, "Well, that's crazy, But it's, yeah. the great American poet Jimmy Buffett says, "There's no rhyme or reason to hurricane season." So there you go. Yeah. So they. You have to realize that not to freak out over a 30-day or whatever it is. Yeah. So, you can do is you can say, you could either pay them off, write them a check. So you had a $20,000 partial on a 60-month partial. So you look at the entitlement schedule. Well, it's going to be their payoff or their entitlement is going to be something less than $10,000 at that point.
Yeah. So do you write in your partials that?
You show them that entitlement schedule as well. So you would write a check. Or you could certainly make those payments to your partial purchaser. Doesn't matter where the payments come from, as long as they're getting them, until you can work out what to do with that loan.
Yeah. And what do you do? Do you make payments to them, or do you just build them up?
Over the years, Eric, I've done both.
Okay. All right.
Awesome. I've got them out of the deal. But again, you can't guarantee that. Again, that guarantee word can get you in trouble. So you don't want to be, you don't want to be guaranteeing any, you can't guarantee returns and you can't guarantee payments. So, but you let them know that you're in their corner and that's just got to be part of it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Perfect. Have a good day.
You too. What else do we have as far as content there, Matt?
As far as the questions that we had brought in, we've got a little bit of background to doing a couple of other things that came through, so we might end up doing that one day. But
why don't we go ahead and do that then? Yeah, that sounds good. We got about 15 more minutes, so we can certainly do that.
So we're in open mic, yeah. So anyone has a question, you can raise your hand or type it into the board, or Joe can sing for you. He's a Jimmy Buffett fan, so.
Let's see. One of my favorite titles is "If the Phone Doesn't Ring, It's Me." So that's a good one. If the phone doesn't ring, it's me. Well, there's a couple of choice titles that I wouldn't talk about on the phone about drinking. And so let's see, Matt. While we're waiting there, a couple of things. I guess the ladies' mastermind is going on. It started today, right? I mean, I don't want to get into this and talk to it a long time, but I think that's started today as well. And then we've got the Summer Summit coming up. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to go to the Dykes thing or to the Summer Summit. So I won't see you guys there. My daughter is 17-year-old, is graduating from high school that weekend, so I will be here and not there. So I hopefully will see you guys at Node Expo next year. Did we have a hand raised, Matt?
No, but Stu had a question. He was wondering if they – well, I can double-check the I didn't see a hand raised, but he was asking that if we broker a note to an investor, does a servicer charge them the same monthly servicing fee as we get when they get a note that they service through Note School or from Note School?
Well, whatever the service fee is going to be, it's not going to be a second service service fee. All they're going to do is redirect the payments where they send their the payments. So if you sell a partial, Stu, then or if you bought a note, the servicer is collecting the payment and sending you the net payment. If you sell a partial, then it's just going to be a redirection of payment to your partial investor during that period of time that you sold the partial for. So there's not an additional service fee for doing that. They're just doing a redirection of where they're sending that monthly net payment to. So instead of sending it to you for the next 60 months, they're going to send it to your investor. And then at the end of that 60-month period, if you've sold a 60-month partial, then it's just going to revert and start coming back and wired back to you.
All right, so Eric did have another question on assignments, so we'll go ahead and pull him up. Eric, go ahead.
Okay, one more quick question. Thanks, guys. So the assignments, like we said, on the unrecorded land contract, what if the land contract goes to term and they pay it off and they own the property free and clear? What do we do with all the unrecorded assignments on the land contract?
At that point in time, the deed is then transferred over to the owner, to the property owner.
Okay. The assignments just sit in the background and don't do anything.
If it were a mortgage note, there'd just be a satisfaction of mortgage, and the borrower already has the deed.
Okay. So those assignments just are in the background. They don't go anywhere or do anything.
And then when the note is if they were to refinance the note, for instance, or the deal, then obviously, and the land contract was paid off. When they refinanced it, then they got a mortgage and note. Then they'll actually get the deed at that point, and the lender will have the promissory note as their security. If it were to pay off, then obviously the deed would then go over to the borrower because they've paid it off now. So just figure the same way as it is with an automobile. You finance an automobile, you pay it off. When you pay it off, the lender sends you the title, sends you the deed, title to the car.
Okay.
The same thing.
They've got
a document custodian that handles all of that typically.
Okay. Very good. Thanks again.
Welcome. So Corrine says, I have not been able to find the power quota spreadsheet that includes the balloon payments. The combined one I have only does full and partial, does not include the balloon. I know I saw this, but I can't find it. Do you know where that is on the site, Matt? I have not a clue.
Are you talking about the combined quota or the one that you use?
No, the one that's available.
I'll have to double check. I haven't downloaded the ones that are up there. I do know that there is a combined power quota that does have a balloon inside of it, but I do know that they normally don't include those because Mr. Speed doesn't normally like putting those in there. So I will double check, Corrine. If you will email me, I will get that answer to you. So matt@noteschool.com, I will get that answer back to you if you email me.
Very good. Stu had another question here. Is it the same as if we broker the whole note and we're not involved? So, Stu, if you sell, if you were to broker a note, the person that buys the note could either leave the servicing where it is, or they could receive the payment themselves, or they could move it to their own servicers. So they could leave the servicing where it is at the time that they bought the note. They could say, I don't want to use a servicer, which would not be recommended, but they could do that, and they could have the payments sent directly into their account, or have the borrowers mail a check or whatever it is, or again, they could choose their own servicer. So that's the way that would work. Let's see. Michael had a question here. Let's see. When purchasing a note, either performing or non-performing, what are the minimum docs we should always ensure are present? Aside from the land contract or mortgage, taxes have been paid, deed showing Colonial, recently purchased an MPL to find only out the fact that there is no deed showing Colonial owned the note. So, you know, Michael, here, I'm going to, on the non-performing and you're buying those, the from Colonial, if there's something that you're not sure of or missing, certainly you need to get on, contact either Charles or Angie or go to that post-closing and make sure you're getting the correct documents. But typically it's going to be a copy, you know, the mortgage, the original note. It's going to be the pay history and the proof of insurance and any other documents that they have along in their document file. So I'm not sure. I can't remember what their checklist looks like, but get with whomever it is that you're doing. All right, let's see. Christian, Joe, would you please send me? Okay, let's see. All right, very good. So, Matt, anything else? Is there any other questions out there?
No, couple of things. This is the last call in this webinar series. So you do need, I believe if we haven't sent it out already, we are in the process of sending out the email saying, hey, register for it. But I want to go ahead and just show you on the member site where that is. So if you go to your connect button, go to your performing registration, that will have the link to where you can register for the May and June webinars, since this is the last webinar in this series, since we do it every 2 months, just because we do have, it's a little tedious when you do it every month, but since we have a lot of students that sign up, we like to make sure that every 2 months we kind of re-engage that process. And so if you haven't already, please go to the Connect tab on your member site, click on the May-June registration and register for those. And otherwise, there is an email coming out if you haven't received it already that will prompt you to do that also. So just kind of wanted to make sure that was let everybody know that, because this link will not work next webinar. So,
gotcha. You'll be kind of all dressed up and no place to go, right?
Exactly. So.
And Lisa, I don't have any more information on Summer Summit than you have. I know you were at the last Titanium Mastermind, so I think you probably know more than I do at this point. So. Guys, listen, I'm going to be in Denver on Saturday doing it's called Connect for Wealth. I'm doing that with Equity Trust, with REI Black Book, and Paul Pedry, who has the REIA there in Denver. So if you're in the Denver area and you want to attend that, just email me at joe@noteschool.com, and I'll tell you how to do that. I'm going to be in Portland, Oregon next Thursday evening and next Saturday doing a full day. That's not this week, but next week in Portland, Oregon at Northwest REIA, if any of you are in that area as well. All right, Matt, I think that is it, and I guess that is the new coming soon. I got that out this morning as well.
Yeah, you remember the old ad where they had the coming soon, they just had a logo on it, and then more stuff would come as it got closer and closer?
Yep.
This is a big thing that we're going to be talking about soon. So just kind of remind yourself to look at this logo, and when you see it, you might want to pay attention, just to let you know.
Very good. Okay, guys, listen, everybody have a safe weekend. And just do your thing out there, guys. A lot of good stuff going on, and I'll talk to you next Thursday. Yep, I'll be on there next Thursday. So have a great time, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye now. See you, Matt. Thank you.
Later, Joe. Bring some pants and a jacket.
I'm going to bring pants and a jacket. Yep, there you go. Okay, bye now.